When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
What is up? Welcome to episode number 319 of On the Corner, the official PitcherList.com podcast. I'm your host, David Mendelson, joined by the man giving me the green light, Nick Pollock. Nick, how's it going?
What is happening? Green lights, which was a fun pun for the SB Roundup because it was Hunter Green, but I think his impact was light. And Justin Paradis, our head graphic designer, the one that started the whole movement of graphics on our site, makes those wonderful SB Roundup graphics for me often. And he made that one himself. And I could not come up with a better one. I thought that was so great. So
I think Hunter Green has more talent in his pinky finger than I have in my whole body with what he produces.
He's truly incredible. And not only that, just like the best person to lead the whole graphic movement on our site. So we're all super lucky Justin Paradis is here.
Yeah, one of the best in the game. And speaking of, you're one of the best in the game in talking pitching.
Well,
and there is a lot of pitching we got to talk about here.
Yes.
I mean, you look down the list, your top 100 movers and shakers here, and I know the people are waiting and they got to hear your points here from just this last couple of days of what we watched. First, are you happy we finally got to watch some baseball?
Because oh my Lord,
it's crazy.
Yes. Opening day was incredible. I streamed from about 2 o'clock to 11 o'clock. So eventually I had to write the roundup. It was insane. It was so much fun watching Tylord McGill
Ooh.
Do his thing. And it was just, that's what we're here for, right? The excitement of the young guys doing something new and establishing themselves as better than they were before and taking those steps forward. Oh, it feels so, so good. I just can't wait though, in like a week or two, when more than one pitcher throws more than 80 pitches in a night. That might be pretty cool.
That was so frustrating. Your guy, like whoever you had in your lineup's doing well and they're just pulling them. And I guess it's like an extended spring training at this point for
right.
guys in their first start. And it's just so frustrating because you don't want that to become a trend, because who knows what that could lead to in future years too. It's, you want to see the best guys and you want to see them pitch the amount that they're supposed to be out there.
Definitely. And by the way, those are saying, hey, wait a second, this isn't Alex Fast. Remember, David Mendelson is the guest host as Alex Fast is on paternity leave. And let's all give a hearty welcome to Zelda Ann Fast, born very recently. She's adorable. Looks actually like a mini Fast in many ways. We're all super thrilled about that. But yeah, we have the top 100 to talk about, and we might as well just dive into it.
Let's do it. And let's start off with the first tier, and no change here, but
it's
grown. We got Garrett Cole, Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Zach Wheeler, Walker Buehler, and Max Scherzer. Now, I'm going to go right at the top here because these first three guys on here all had duds. I mean,
oh man,
just like Garrett Cole, you know, his first start, 4 innings, 4 hits, 3 earned runs, only 3 strikeouts. But I mean, if you just look at his, just as far as his whiffs, he had 11 whiffs on 68 pitches. So still a 16% swinging strike rate. And same kind of with Corbin Burns too, a 13% swinging strike rate, and you know, did not look great in his first start, giving up, you know, 3 runs in 5 innings and only 4 strikeouts. Woodruff obviously extending his stuff from spring training. What are your thoughts on these guys? Are you concerned about any of these three up top?
Well, okay. I should have done this. This is all my fault, Mendelson. I should let everybody know that because of 4 days of baseball, especially as you said, it was extended spring training. It has been for this week and likely will kind of be that way for another week. I've personally not changed anybody inside of the top 30. I think it is 32 or so. And that does include the top tier. I know it's the most boring week of the list you'll ever find. There are some things that obviously to talk about, but yeah, I mean, Cole, Burns, Woodruff all had disappointing outings. It's going to happen a lot right now, and I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm just going to kind of treat this as if it's spring training a bit. It does, you know, we'll talk about some guys in the second tier that maybe are a little bit more concerning, but I watched the Woodruff start. I think he just got babbitt, honestly, maybe a couple bad pitches here and there, but really he's not all of a sudden different. Garrett Cole's fine. He had a rocky first inning. He said it was even because he was delayed by 4 minutes with the opening ceremonies. I mean, he's totally fine. And it was a normal, muggy, cold, windy day, whatever you want to call it, in Chicago for Burns. Pretty poetic that he walked the first batter of the year instead of striking out 58 in a row before his first walk like last year. But it's pretty funny. I mean, the top nine, all the top nine pitchers on this list have their question marks, which is insane. And you know what? I hope you listening decided not to get an ace in the first two rounds. Like I always say, you should. So yeah, hopefully it worked out.
And just like you said, in this second tier, Sandy Alcantara, Julio Urias, Shane Bieber, Robbie Ray. First, do you have a name for this tier? And then we got to get into a couple guys in this tier.
Okay, I'm going to do a name for tiers one through five because they have not changed. All right. I feel like that's the only way. I'm going to call them the Manor because they've been the same way since like the 1700s. Okay. that's just it. And it's posh. It's a step above the others. Like, oh, you are, look at these plebes who are changing and going up and down. More tea, please. You know, that's
really elegant right now on this podcast.
Yeah. That was very elegant. Absolutely. That's the word I would use for that. But yeah, that's the name of it. Are you concerned about any of these? I mean, Alcantara, Urias, Bieber, Ray have all gone. Ray has two ticks down on his velocity. Sandy Alcantara wasn't his sharpest. Walked five against the Giants. Julio Urias is nearly three ticks down in his velocity. Shane Bieber down two ticks and had a drop of 410 RPM on his curveball, which is laughable to say the least. Are you legitimately concerned about any?
I mean, the one that's still sticking out to me is Robbie Ray. And I know the stat line looked good, but the velocity is down. He walked four batters in that start. And you give me a sniff of Robbie Ray and walking people again, and I'm going to be a little hesitant. And this is from somebody who was already didn't draft him in any of his leagues this year. The velocity, I think, will come back. I'm just wondering if the four walks, is that something where he's going to start losing control again? And then be one of those guys that gets a lot of strikeouts, but is inconsistent. Shane Bieber, I know there was concerns how it extended into last year, how he finished the year with diminished velocity, and he comes out with diminished velocity. I will say if that velocity stays, like, what is it, around 90 miles an hour, if it stays around there for another couple starts, I'm going to be very concerned about him as well. Urias, I think he was in Colorado first start of the year. Sure. That to me, I wasn't as concerned about that start, but the other two I have a little bit more. I'm keeping my eye on the other two a little bit more.
Okay. I mean, I'm not worried about Alcantara in the slightest.
Yeah, me neither.
Robbie Ray, for the walks, still very much around the zone. I mean, the changeup was really bad. He elevated that one all day and it was terrible. But the other stuff seemed totally normal. I will say that Robbie Ray, part of the reason why he's had success last year, not only was him being in the zone a lot, but he did have an increase of velocity by a full tick. He brought that down now, but the fact that he went over 90 pitches is pretty dang cool for everybody else not doing it. And all of a sudden he gets seven innings out of Robbie Ray. I remember freaking out. He came out from the sixth. They went out for the seventh and did it in like eight pitches. Yeah, no problem. I got this. I mean, he's going to be that guy for Seattle and establish that really early. Urias and Bieber, man, I know I'm not allowed to move them on the list right now. I'm serious. I'm saying this, guys, because it's just, it wouldn't be fair. As we talked about before with all the spring training stuff, these are guys in the top 30 who we are doing, we're doing this for the full season with them. You know, with the back half, we're moving them now on purpose, hoping to have someone that we feel as confident in as we do in the top 30. That's the whole intent here. So I'm not going to change this after 1 week with these guys, and especially this kind of week. But man, Bieber losing that much spin. I know it was really cold and stupid in Kansas City, but that's a lot. And then Urias, I know that it is Coors, but he also went to Coors last year and was good, except for just kind of getting hit a little bit. but velocity was good when he was there. And Arias, there's a question. In spring, he was down 2.5 ticks as well, the last start before the beginning of the year. And there's this big, big question mark. There was about 200 innings for Arias between the regular season and the playoffs. And we had some concern if the stamina would be down and it would affect him. And I brushed it aside like a novice. And I can't help but wonder if that is the thing. So, Nick, why didn't you lower that? Because it's one start. I'm just telling you the worries, the things that you should be focusing on for the future, for the next outing and what we're going to be very much attuned to for the next two starts.
Yeah, and then the four whiffs on 57 pitches doesn't help your eyes either.
No.
The one thing I've heard people talk about is they're saying it's still early April and it's really cold, and I feel like a lot of pitchers still don't have their full velocity when it's cold.
Yeah, definitely. And I buy into that.
That could potentially maybe in the next month we see things start heating up and then their velocity start getting back to what we saw last year, but that's still a big if. You know, that's just kind of speculation at this point.
Yeah, no, it's something that, as you mentioned, yeah, the next couple of weeks, I think you'll see a lot of velocities go up. It's just some won't, and that's when we go, uh-oh, there's a problem.
Well, we get into this next tier in tier three. We have Charlie Morton, Max Fried, Joe Musgrove, Logan Webb, Kevin Gausman, Freddie Peralta, and Aaron Nola. So like as you said, these top five tiers aren't changing, but there are definitely some questions I have about some of these guys. And the two that catch my eye are the bottom two, and Freddie Peralta and Aaron Nola, who both kind of had so-so starts here. We already knew Nola was going to have questionable defense behind him. He's given up a lot of home runs in spring training, and he didn't look great in his first start. And Peralta seemed like he was still having some problems too. And he's somebody that obviously has not done it for years and years. And we're kind of wondering, if is it something that's going to regress some this year? Do you have any concerns about these bottom two guys?
Not really. Peralta, yeah, he did not get the slider strikes that he normally gets, or at least he got last year. It's Professor Chaos again, which is like, uh-oh, that's terrible. But now, again, one star. I mean, all of Milwaukee, the entire rotation of the weekend was just rough. I mean, Adrian Hauser actually did badly today. Something's going on there. The only good one is Aaron Ashby, who got the unluckiest win loss ever on opening day, and I'm still upset about it. I'm not really like that concerned about Freddie Peralta. I mean, hey, maybe everything I said last year about being hesitant about Peralta and his crossbody mechanics actually are going to show up over a full sample. But I mean, last year he had a near 10% walk rate, right? Like he was still wild, is just effective while doing so. And you got to think that he'll still be able to do that, at least at this point. With Aaron Nola, he allowed 70% ground balls, or at least 2/3 ground balls. And that's really the big indication for me. Last year, the fly ball rates, the ground ball rate actually fell to about 40% and change. And yeah, you could pretty much say like, oh, that's two different grounders to fly balls or something like that. But it did seem like a very much of an indication, and Girardi messed them up by keeping him into the seventh inning. Six innings was one earned run. You do not leave a guy in the seventh inning when it's first and third with nobody out. That's just a rule of thumb. Like maybe you can say, okay, first base runner, fine. Second, no, you're done. You're out. But he left him in for the third, and we all knew he was going to allow a home run. It was just, we knew this. This is the textbook Phillies and Girardi move. I'm not worried.
The one thing I will say about Peralta, this is from Justin Johnson at JJ_stats on Twitter. He's a great follow. Freddie Peralta has allowed a home run in five of his last six starts. And if you look at him quarterly last season in 2021, the Roto score in 2021, a 3.5 to a 4, is considered a top 25 pitcher. First quarter, he was 5.84. Second quarter, he was 4.55. Third quarter, he was 2.89. And then fourth quarter, he was -0.17.
So, I think that end, though, keep in mind, he only threw 144 pitches. So the Brewers didn't mess with him. Or sorry, innings, rather. So the Brewers didn't mess with him a little in that second half. And that might have actually messed with Peralta in some way. I have to put some weight into that. But yeah, it could be the case of, look, it was just first half Peralta last year, and he just hasn't been as good since. And maybe he disrupted his rhythm a little. Something definitely to monitor.
Yeah, for sure. We get into this next tier now, tier four. And we have Carlos Rodon, Alek Manoah, Trevor Rogers, Justin Verlander, Frankie Montas, Sugar Shane McClanahan, Jose Berrios, Yu Darvish, Chris Bassett, My heart throbbed. Dylan Cease and Zach Gallen.
It's so fun. It's so fun to bring you on, man, because I've just been shouting from the hilltops about everyone avoiding Dylan Cease. And if we didn't mention it last week, Mendelsohn loves Dylan Cease. So it's pretty fun to do that. And right before this cast, I was watching Alek Manoah go through his sixth frame in his first start of the year. And I've made it an effort to showcase that I like Manoah more than Cease. It's pretty even right now, honestly. They both had two great starts, but it's been fun.
That's true. We were comparing the stats between them in their first two starts here before the show started.
We got to take those early victory laps, you know? What else are we doing?
Yeah, we were both huffing and puffing from those. But this tier is very interesting. And I, of course, I have to go with the guy at 18. I know we started with him last week, too. But this guy was legendary in his start. Right. He had 12 strikeouts in 5 innings, and I believe set the record for the most amount of whiffs and the fewest amount of pitches for any pitcher at that point. His velocity was up again, and we were talking, Nick. We were saying, if this guy's healthy, he's going to be a stone-cold stud, and he's making everybody that drafted him look very smart right now.
Well, okay. The two ifs of Carlos Rodon is, one, is the velocity going to be there? We know that's there. 97.4. It was 93. It was 93 in every other year. Okay, he had never averaged 94 in a season. And then last season, he started doing 94.5, then 95, then 96, and then he capped it at 97. And the first start of this year is harder than any other start of last year. Are you kidding? It's like, how am I even more surprised and in awe of Carlos Rodon than I was before? But that was one of the two ifs. And the second one is the most annoying one, which is the stamina. And the reason why Carlos Rodon is at 18 and not 10 or even you can say like 5 is because we don't know how long this is going to last. He broke down last year. We don't know how long the shoulder is going to hold up. You can make a case like a Jacob DeGrom scenario of, hey, we all knew that DeGrom wasn't going to be healthy for the full year. But even in 92 innings last year, DeGrom was still within the top 30 starting pitchers, right? He was just that beneficial. Should we be treating Carlos Rodon like that? And that's something I'm going to be have to wrestle. I'm going to have to wrestle with that every single week. And I hate it. And why do you have to do this to me, Carlos Rodon? Because you are a stud. You are actually the top 5 starter right now on a per game basis. But we just don't know how it's going to last. And with every single start, him still doing the thing is going to make it harder and harder for me to keep down. So you likely will see him in the top 10 and then all of a sudden get hurt. I mean, that's my premonition for 2022.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos Rodon in opening weekend was 6th in WAR, and he actually threw the 6th most amount of pitches from a starting pitcher in a game far this season.
They
were letting him go, and I mean, 24 whiffs in 5 innings is just unreal.
He's on the Giants.
Yeah.
Like, that 24 whiffs is independent of the team that you're on. But then he's on a winning ball club with an amazing right field and a good defense. Like, come on, man.
And we're just going to keep, this will be the last thing I gush over him, but he was the first in Giants history to have a 12 strikeout game with an under 90 pitches. It's only happened 17 times in Major League history. So, right. That's a way to make an impression with your new ball club.
Absolutely. So. And I will, the last thing I'll say is you really have to make a decision for yourself. In a head-to-head league, I would say Rodon is reduced in value because of the expectation that by September, either the Giants are going to play it safe with him or he's hurt. And in roto leagues, it doesn't matter as much because whatever you get out of him, let's say he gives you 140 innings by the end of this, so that's 80% or so, let's say 80 to 75% of another starter who's ahead of him right now. Is he going to be 125% of that player in the amount of time? Do you understand what I'm getting at? That's a tough question to answer, but in some ways, yes. And that will make him even more valuable in roto. So once he is shut down or slowed down or whatever that we expect, you can then oust him for something else in that roster spot so you get more out of it. But you can't really do that head-to-head. You'll just lose in your fantasy playoffs. So it's a little bit worse there.
Yeah. The only other pitcher I was going to ask you about in this tier potentially is Jose Berríos, because he didn't have a great first start. Are you concerned about him at all?
Oh, man. I think if you're going to judge one inning from the entirety of 2022, the worst one you can do is the first of the season. And that's all we saw from Berríos. We didn't even see that. We just saw two outs. And no way can anyone possibly put any weight on the first inning of a season for a pitcher. You just can't. I mean, even Cole had a bad first inning, right? And they, like, you're not going to judge him for that. Like, this is what happens. So poor Jose Berríos did not get out of the first inning against the Rangers, who I personally undervalued as an offense. I think they've made a statement a bit about being something to be scared of. Not necessarily in the top five or so, but we cannot consider them a streamable team at this point, I think. Yeah, and Berríos, sorry, buddy, but he's going to be just fine. He's the great undulator. He's going to be good and terrible. Like, that's him.
I feel like I didn't see how many pitches he threw, but I was like, he gave up like 3 earned runs, I think, or something right around there. They didn't let him go. I was kind of shocked how quickly they pulled him. Cause when Eric, my brother, told me that he didn't even make it out of the first inning, I was expecting like a 5-6 earned run showing.
Well, it was 4 earned runs, 34 pitches, 2 walks, 0 Ks, a home run, and 3 hits. It wasn't good.
Yeah. I guess I can't argue that.
It wasn't good. He had 18% CSW, 1 whiff on 34 thrown, 10% on his curveballs. It wasn't good. It wasn't good, Mendy.
It definitely wasn't. Before we get into tier 5 here, though, we're going to take a quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back to cover now into tier 5. And this is a very short, a very studly tier. Clayton Kershaw, Tyler Molly, Pablo Lopez. The last of kind of the tier that didn't change too much here. And I got to ask you, did Clayton Kershaw look good to you in his first outing when he's pitched? Did any of these guys stand out to you necessarily?
I mean, honestly, I was just really happy for all of them. You know, specifically Tyler Molly did it on the road. Everyone's going to say, of course he did, but it's against Atlanta. That's a really good team. And he did really well there. And now he's going to host Cleveland on Tuesday. And I'm excited for Tyler Molly to do that. I think he can really rid himself of this I'm terrible at home curse that's been placed on him, or at least the stigma that's been given. And while Pablo Lopez, we had some concern about maybe velocity was a little bit down in spring, but nope, totally right there. Good command. Everything's good. Yeah, I don't know. I feel good about these guys.
Yeah, they seem very like solid in their spot right now. Very much reliable SP3, SP4s for your team. And yeah, until otherwise, we kind of know their faults and we know what they're good at. And I kind of like where they're at here. But then we get into tier 6. Luis Severino, Patrick Sandoval, Eduardo Rodriguez, Nathan Eovaldi, Logan Gilbert, Shohei Ohtani, and Framber Valdez. And right. I look at this tier, and a lot of these guys did pretty well in their first start. Shohei Ohtani obviously looked incredible. Logan Gilbert looked like the, what we're going to call him, the AL prodigy of Jacob DeGrom.
Not a chance. No, no. We'll get to that. Yeah. Not, that's not right at all.
Oh man. I'm sorry, Logan. I'm vouching for you, man. I'm trying to get you the recognition here.
No, I spent a good like 3 minutes watching every curveball, slider, and changeup he threw. I just want to see quick succession, only those pitches. And I was able to do that. And I was not impressed. The major thing about Logan Gilbert through the preseason was that he was developing this slider and this changeup. And like, oh man, he's really got this thing. And Logan Gilbert last year, amazing four-seamer, but he needs more. He needs to have those secondaries allow him to get strikes confidently so that he can do his thing with his four-seam, because it's a great pitch. I'm not totally sold yet that he's there. I know this line was good, but Logan Gilbert isn't fully developed with those secondaries yet. And when he does, we're going to know about it. We're going to, oh, it's going to be something when that happens, but it's not a guarantee that it does. And I hope we do see it pretty soon. I don't know.
He's got a lot of potential. I know a lot of people in the industry really like him, but kind of on the other side of the coin, people I feel like don't give enough love to is someone I like to coin the ground ball goblin in Framber Valdez, who just gets so many of them. He just eats them all up. And,
oh, man.
I mean, he was overshadowed by Shohei Ohtani. Everybody's focusing on all his strikeouts, but there goes Framber Valdez with another start that's just kind of under the radar. How do you feel about Framber Valdez?
I think he's pretty cool. I'll put it this way. Last year, when he returned from his injury, Framber Valdez was amazing. Second start was 10 strikeouts and 7 innings. Third start was 7.1 innings of 8 strikeouts. He had 4 straight starts of 7 innings after his first, like, okay, here's 72 pitches. Just go and survive against the Padres. And that's kind of what we just saw here. I feel like Framber Valdez can go off and just do that. At the same time, Framber Valdez also had a harder fastball in this one. And the biggest worry I've had is his four-seamer. Really, I'm sorry, not his four-seamer, his sinker, which allowed 40% hard contact in 2021. Did not happen in the start against the Angels. Am I willing to say, like, oh, he's completely fixed his sinker? No, absolutely not. But throwing harder is a good thing. He averaged 92.5 on his fastball last year. It was over 93 in the start. I hope that sticks around. But yeah, we're not completely out of the woods or anything yet. It's good to see.
Yeah. I mean, he looked really good, nearly 7 innings and 6 Ks against the Angels. And yeah, I'm very much liking what I see of him. I don't have very much of him this year, but absolutely fantastic. Does not get a lot of love. I think someone also calls him the Frambulance. That's a pretty good name too. A lot of cool names for these guys.
The unvalidated, but no, if I can't do it, I don't know. He's I always want to do something with Valdez and validation, but I just can't get it.
I feel like you're on the cusp of it though.
Yeah.
Like it's coming.
One day.
Then we get into tier 7. And this is the tier where we're going to start having something to talk about. Michael Kopech, John Means, Luis Garcia, Alex Wood, Alex Cobb, Ty Lord McGill.
You can get them on the, by the way, you can go to Pitchless, shop.pitchless.com. You can check out our merch store. We have Ty Lord McGill shirts on sale now. Go check them out.
What is the image of him like throwing a pitch?
It's in the Mets font of Ty Lord McGill.
I love it.
That's pretty good.
And then Sonny Gray is the last one in this tier, but we got to talk about Tyler McGill. We got to talk about Ty Lord McGill and just how incredible he looked in his first start. What did you see?
Well, okay. The first inning was one of the hypest innings I've seen in a long time because you're going against the Nationals. If you're going against the Nationals, that means you're going against Juan Soto. And to see Ty Lord McGill throw 99 past Juan Soto is something else. I mean, that's nice. I like his mechanics. It's very straight and forward. This is not the same guy we saw last year. My hesitation entering this season before we knew about this newfound velocity was a guy throwing 94, 95, really 94 and change, and not having enough in the secondaries, right? Changeup sometimes was good. Slider was okay. But the fastball really made or broke his starts, and sometimes it wasn't that great. And then all of a sudden in this, he's throwing 98, 99 out of the gate. Like, what? And then... He's going against Nelson Cruz and he throws a gorgeous slider. I mean, this is a new one. This is a tighter, more vertical slider than last year. Gorgeous. I mean, this thing is perfect. Oh, I was squealing. I was jumping in my seat. We had an amazing live stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/pitchless. Always be plugging. Just kidding, guys.
it's a professional. I love it.
Check it out. 9 a.m. to 12 every single weekday morning. I'm live streaming. Anyway, Tyler McGill looked great. Now, third inning arrives, and oh no, it's 93, it's 94, right? It's not the same as before. He burned himself out a little bit, but he got back. He got back to 96, then we saw 97 in the fifth, and that was the start. And I know the Nationals aren't the strongest. Nelson Cruz, Josh Bell, and Juan Soto, but after that, it's nothing else. Still, Tyler McGill is a completely different pitcher now. the fact that he's thrown five innings already, I have this tier here of guys that I can see going five plus consistently. This is not the tier of inefficient pitchers outside of Sonny Gray, and Sonny Gray's his own little weird animal. Same with Michael Kopech, who's now in this because I'm worried about his command a bit. But these are guys I can see through the entire year just being good pitchers with a taste of a ceiling that we might be able to get if we get a nice little step ladder. Tyler McGill, I'm excited for you. If you're still on your waiver wire, I would go and get him. Don't necessarily drop someone who hasn't started yet. It's a very easy thing to get into this yo-yo at the beginning of the year when one guy does really well, and then you drop someone who hasn't started yet, and then that guy goes and he does really well, then you drop the guy you already picked up, and you never get a start. You just don't get one. You just like having the potential of a start, but you never actually have one because you keep dropping guys and replacing them. So be careful about that. But he gets the Phillies. I'm excited to see what Tyler McGill will do.
And we always talk about one of the big things we look for in pitchers is velo bumps. And yes, like we talked about, the velo bump was big. He was up 1.5 average miles per hour on his fastball in this first start here. But not just his fastball. His slider had more velocity, had a lot more movement and spin to it. And his changeup actually had a lot more vertical and horizontal movement, and actually was also 4 miles per hour faster. So everything just across the board was very different. Just
so
with
hype. Oh my God. It was so hype.
He's the early story, I think, in fantasy baseball. No doubt.
Oh yeah. No, I think I put on a whole brigade of just like tweets of like, I think I put out like five or six tweets in an hour about Tyler McGill. It was so, I mean, that's really truly the joy of this for me, is just someone making a statement like that.
When is his next start?
It's against the Phillies on Wednesday.
Can you be the first to tweet out it's Tyler McGill Day? And like in the morning, yes, people wake up.
I will do it at 12:01.
Yes. Yes.
All right. I will be up with this SP roundup, of course. You know,
everybody's going to wake up and it's going to be Tyler McGill Day, and we got to celebrate properly.
Absolutely. Live every day like it's Tyler McGill Day. I'm sorry, Aaron Nola fans. I do that. Don't worry. We can have multiple days.
It's getting now into tier eight, and this tier is similar to kind of what it was before. Joe Ryan, Tanner Houck, Reed Detmers, and Matt Brash, all young, exciting players.
Yeah.
And the only one that hasn't pitched as of right now, as of recording on Monday, is Matt Brash. The other three each had a start. I'm curious, what were your thoughts on these guys' starts? Are you concerned about any of them? Were you signs that you were intrigued by in their starts? Because varying degrees of success from these guys.
Sure. Reed Detmers is good. Don't worry about him. Short start. And also last year he had jitters initially on. Like, don't worry about Reed Detmers. He's going to be completely fine. Joe Ryan the same way, I think. I believe with all these, they're going to take some time to develop into who they should be. Joe Ryan and Demers, to me, I think I'm a little bit more confident than the other two that they are on the path towards it. Tanner Houck has incredible upside with that slider and really filthy fastball. But he faced the worst team I think he could have faced in the Yankees, in that they are so patient at the plate. They really, I mean, oh man, I did a video breakdown. I'm doing those again, by the way. I'm going to keep plugging YouTube. Go check them out. They're great. Broke down the first inning for Tanner Houck yesterday, and Joey Gallo had the best at bat, where Houck had these first pitch sliders, two of them, that were just off the plate, but he got them called as strikes coming away, you know, away from Gallo, come back off the outside corner, right? And he tried to get them again, and Gallo refused to swing. He's like, I don't care. This ump is going to get it right. And Houck, to his credit, hit the spot three more times. And three more times, the ump called it a ball. And he walked Joey Gallo, essentially, and threw, I think, a fastball in there somewhere. And that was it. And it's so hard if you're Tanner Houck to, like, your game is getting swings off the plate. You know, you have this sinker that moves so much inside to righties, down away to lefties, and that slider. And you're relying on that. The Yankees are not a team that does that. They make you pitch your strikes. So I'm not really too worried about it from Houck. I think he's going to find his groove when he doesn't have to face his pinstripes. But if you see that in the future, I might be a little bit intimidated to let him fly there again.
Yeah. So stay with me on this comparison.
Sure.
I know they're very different pitchers, but the amount of gifts I saw of Tanner Houck in his start against the Yankees compared to what his final line was, kind of seems very Dustin May-ish from last year.
Ah.
You would see a lot of Dustin May pitches the results weren't there. But then before he got hurt, he had a nice little stretch where he was starting to come along. It seemed like it was coming together, the nasty stuff and the production. You think that's something similar that Hauk could eventually also start transforming to?
He still has steps to go with this command. The bigger question with Dustin May, I mean, the two-seamers are so nice to look at, but they aren't always the best when it comes to results. I mean, Hauk's has more vertical drop than many others, than most. So there might be some difference there. Like, he does a really good job of it dying under the bats of righties, inside and down. And Dustin May's transition to being an actual legit starter was the cutter finally getting whiffs. It was so strange. It wasn't getting them in 2020. And I remember entering, this time last year thinking Dustin May isn't that good because the Dodgers won't let him pitch and he doesn't have a whiff pitch. But all of a sudden he did. I was like, oh, I'm dumb. Cool. Great. Wonderful. And that was the main difference. Well, Hauk doesn't need that whiff pitch yet. Right now it's him trying to find the zone a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, there certainly are those gift darlings of pitchers, right? And it can get easy to fall into that trap sometimes. But I'm telling you right now, Tyler McGill is really good. Just believe me, okay?
Bring Tyler McGill back.
Yeah.
I love it. Are you excited for Matt Brash tonight?
Oh, can't wait. It's two bats against the White Sox, and he probably won't go five full innings. But you know what? We got to get there sometime, you know? Just over and over and over again. I won't play the MB game, as the Milton Bradley game of Matt Brash. I'm ready. Let's do it.
He's going to be the Brash and the Bold tonight for sure.
I think
he's got it. let's get to tier nine. Sean Manaea, Ranger Suarez, Marcus Stroman, Adam Wainwright, Tarik Skubal, Ian Anderson, Waskari Noah, Tristan McKenzie, Jose Urquidy, Jordan Montgomery, Nick Lodolo, Jesus Luzardo, and Hunter Green. So there's a lot of guys in here, but the two Reds that pop out that dropped are Tarik Skubal and Ian Anderson. Are you concerned about either of these two guys?
Yeah. So Tarik Skubal, I sat there and I watched his game against the White Sox, and I kind of already knew Chicago White Sox, they're good against lefties. This is going to be a tougher start for Tarik Skubal. But I also kind of realized, wait a second, your slider isn't really being used and isn't quite there, and you're trying to do this fastball changeup, and no. You're not as far along as I thought you were. And it's the same thing with Ian Anderson a bit. I mean, Ian Anderson's a completely different story of, like, his command is way off now. It could be a toe blister that's still affecting him from spring training. He had 5 walks in his game. But both of those guys have the same story of, I think over time, they're both going to be really good. But how long are you going to have to wait for it? I don't know. And it could be just next start for Tarik Skubal. He turns it on and everything's okay. But I realized, Adam Wainwright looked really good. Marcus Stroman's very solid. Sean Manaea is very solid. Like, I'd rather just be okay with those. And the ceiling of Detmers, Brash, Hauk, Ryan is really, really high. And I feel like it's more tangible at this moment than what Tarik Skubal is providing. And same with Ian Anderson. So that's why they saw those drops. I never liked doing it that early, but I feel like this is the point of the tides changing early. We had these early indications of what's going to hit early. And it might be a little frustrating to roster both of those guys right now.
Yeah, no, I can understand that, especially someone that has some Ian Anderson. He just seems like you can't even put him in at this point. You have to wait and kind of see if he figures it out. But somebody that looks like they are already having some signs of figuring it out is Hunter Green. Somebody I think that people were very excited to watch. And you saw him in his first start there, 5 innings, 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, 34% whiff rate, 32% CSW, fastball topping out at about 101.6 miles per hour, and I believe an average mile per hour of 99.7 on his thing. I mean, he looked absolutely just electric. I'm wondering if he can throw that hard and consistently and not get hurt again. That's something that kind of scares me, but what were your thoughts on Hunter Green's debut?
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, this is a massive, massive tier, and Hunter Green... you want to talk about a guy to compare, like, being a gif monster that isn't actually quite there? It's Hunter Green. The guy, that 101.6 pitch, guess what? That was a single. He allowed a single on that pitch to Matt Olson, a 3-2 pitch that if he had a slider that he had confidence in, he would have gone Matt Olson out, but elected to say, I'm going to throw just a fastball without a good command, got it too far down and in, easy for Olson to quickly drop the barrel of the bat, pull it to right field, pass the shift for a single. And that's an issue with Hunter Green. It's oddly hittable of a fastball. The secondary stuff, the slider was better than I thought it was going to be. That had over 30% CSW and was overall an impressive pitch. The changeup, not so much. And, you know, he tried to throw it sometimes against lefties, trying to be a changeup fastball guy against lefties, fastball slider against righties. I don't think that works. His changeup isn't good enough. So I think you're going to see a cherry bomb situation. If he has a right-handed heavy lineup, it can be better because that means more sliders, fewer changeups. But yeah, you're gonna see a high strikeout guy, probably 25% to 30% strikeouts with a 4+ ERA and a whip north of, I don't know, around 120 or higher. So be ready for that. There's value in that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily. But yeah, I don't trust the command of Hunter Green through the entire year.
I think it's kind of interesting too. They let him, a rookie, throw 92 pitches in his first.
Insane, right? Crazy.
Wild.
Yeah.
But it's exciting. And then obviously Lodolo also in that, you know, he's going to be taking a step in that rotation too. He's somebody that they have some exciting guys there, which is to see if they let them both go the entire season. Yeah. Or if they, you know, try to manipulate their innings some or what they'll do with them, but
definitely. And with Green also, I have worries of him inside of Cincy, you know, the Great American Small Park, as Bubba likes to call it. That's yeah, that is a not a fun place for Green to pitch. And I can imagine him having a lot of, you know, allowing so many home runs there. Nick Lodolo does start, and I'm actually a little higher on him on the list by two here. I think you're not going to have as volatile of performances day to day. I think there's a higher chance of Lodolo giving you better ratios. So we'll see what happens with that. It could be very stupid, and this could be a very bad debut, but I think what Lodolo has to offer is going to excite a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch him pitch. And I think he's, like we mentioned before, people talk about Hunter Green a lot more because of, you know, where he was drafted, the prospect pedigree. He's the name people know. Lodolo's kind of slid under the radar a little bit, but he's a very good pitcher in his own right. So he'll get his chance coming up here soon this week here. But we get into tier 10, Merrill Kelly, Zach Eflin, Noah Syndergaard, Nick Martinez, and Eric Lauer. The biggest riser here is Merrill Kelly.
Yeah.
You guys, for those Pokemon lovers out there, you remember Merrill, the Pokemon.
Oh my God. Wow.
I always
the
think
blue
of that.
Pikachu. Blue Chew or whatever. Pika
Blue. The Blue there Chew, yes. Yeah. You remember it. Yeah. So
I grew up in, you know, that was my time, David.
I would do the sound it made, but I'm not going to embarrass myself.
Oh, wow. No, please. No, seriously, you have to do it now. Come on. Mandy.
Hopefully when Nick edits this, he'll bleep this out. It's like a meow, 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 meow. Something like that.
I'm going to ask if I can leave that in because I think that was a wonderful addition. That's all I'm going to say. Please continue.
But you got the Pokemon here at 63, and he looked really good in his first start. I know in the past, he's been somebody that shown flashes and then he kind of turns back into a pumpkin. Do you think this is for real, what we've seen so far in his first start?
What I like is he had higher velocity, 93 plus, and his changeup looked excellent. If I was really convinced that this is going to stick around in every single start, I probably push him up closer to where we were put Tyler McGill, because 7 strikeouts and 4 innings against the Padres did not feel wrong for what he was doing. Command was excellent too. You know, I watched every single pitch at this, inside, outside, up, down. He was doing the whole thing. And in previous years, Merrill Kelly, more reliant on cutters and curveballs. And this was a fastball changeup show. That was really, really fun to see. I do have a question that, yes, it is increased velocity, but it's 93 and change. It's not 95, 96, right? It's not that overpowering fastball, but the changeup was that good. So I'm excited about this. I think that there is an opportunity. You know, I'm kind of chasing at this point guys that can go 5-6 consistently. Without hurting you. And we're trying to search for this before. It was a better version of Toby. So we're going to call this Holly's now. I know I have it as a reward or an award at the end of the year. And I might just keep that as a Spider-Man then and use Holly as this term of being a Toby, but with some strikeout upside, just a better version of a Toby. And yeah, Merrill Kelly can be that if he has that changeup.
And we saw that Merrill Kelly was also up half a tick in spring training too. So it's not like this first start was the first time his velocity was, which makes me more excited that this could be something that lasts longer into the season.
Absolutely. Yeah. We heard some rumors about it. I didn't really quite know. And it's so good. Oh, good job, Merrill Kelly. We're all so proud of you.
Oh, we love you. We love you, Merrill Kelly. but then the other guy in this tier that I had a question about, Noah Syndergaard, who only had one strikeout in his first start, and people are talking about with his velocity down that he might have to start using more of his secondaries to get people out. And he has to maybe start making that transformation as a pitcher, because even though if he's throwing 95, it's not the 99 that he was throwing before.
And I'm with you.
Maybe the strikeouts aren't there, but he could still potentially be an effective pitcher.
Right. I'm conflicted about Noah Syndergaard, but I've recognized that if you have Noah Syndergaard, you should feel fine starting him. You know, the two outings, I should say, one is against the Dodgers, one was against the Astros. Dodgers, the final tune-up, but it was five innings. You know, he did the full thing. He's not throwing the same slider that he used to. The curveball is there, but not quite as good. The changeup is really nice, though. And even at 94-95, that's still 94-95. Syndergaard could just be a generally effective pitcher. So I've elected to put him in the middle of the 60s. And that essentially says, yeah, you're not dropping Syndergaard right now. I don't think anyone with Noah Syndergaard is dropping him at the moment. And I recognize that. But he's not on the same level of the guys in Tier 9, right? He's not on the same level as Adam Wainwright or Marcus Stroman. I'd rather have Tristan McKenzie right now and chase that instead. Or Jose Urquidy. It's not the same. Zach Eflin is actually one up above him because it's just that's what Syndergaard kind of wants to be. And Eflin has been that for a long time. So that's kind of how I feel about it. I don't see the top 30 ceiling that some do thinking about the old Syndergaard. As you mentioned, those days are likely gone. The other guy in this tier, though, Eric Lauer, I got to say this. What an experience it has been. If anyone listening to this podcast for the past like 5 months, I was out on Eric Lauer. Then I said, oh, wait, you know what? Increased velocity last year. A full take on his four-seamer, up to 15% swing strike rate. His cutter was a good strike getting pitch, increased by 2-3 ticks. I'm back in on Eric Lauer. Then he gets a groin injury in camp and he's a week behind. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not in on it. I watched his first spring training start. He looked like his command was all over the place. We didn't have any velocity readings. I was like, you know what? Eno just said that he was kind of out on him. I am now all of a sudden I'm doing this. And then we get a report that Eric Lauer is throwing like 94-95 now. That he's throwing two ticks harder from last year? We haven't even seen him start yet, and I've changed him like four times. So I'm like, all right, you know what? He gets Baltimore. Adrian Hauser couldn't handle him tonight, apparently, but fine. Let's take a good chance in Eric Lauer right now.
Wait, so you're in on Eric Lauer right now?
I'm in. I just added 19 spots to 67. Let's
go. If he gives up five earned runs in two innings tomorrow against Baltimore...
He's down again.
He's your hokey pokey because you're putting like your left foot in. Your
oh,
left
I
foot
love
out.
That so much. Oh, that's such a good phrase. Okay, I'm gonna hold on to that one. Love it. Love it.
Well, hopefully, Lauer can stay in. That's
sure.
That's the hope with the
hokey pokey Reese. You know, I can't wait to not do that to Eric Lauer because he's not going to disappoint you. He's going to have that velocity. He's going to maintain that 15% to plus swing strike rate on his four seamer. It's going to be a great time. I have a good feeling about it.
Lauer, pressure's on for tomorrow, buddy, when you pitch. next tier, we're now in tier 11. Anthony Desclafani, Kyle Hendricks, Kyle Wright, Bailey Ober, Aaron Civale, Luis Patino, Drew Rasmussen, Jordan Hicks, and Tommy Romero.
Yeah,
who many of you might not know, but he just got called up by the Rays and expected to either start or piggyback tomorrow on Tuesday. So he's somebody that maybe not as high a prospect as others might know, but he's got some nasty stuff. If you see his fastball, goodness gracious, it looks nice. But before we get to him, I got to ask you about Kyle Hendricks and Kyle Wright, two names that were not on this list when we talked about this last week. What did you see in Hendricks' first start that just made you have to bump in here?
I will always laugh whenever I see two Kyles together because I just think of Kyle 2 from South Park, and that's one of the funniest characters ever. I guess he's Kyle 1. Kyle Hendricks had his changeup, 13 over 33 whiffs on his changeup in the first game of the year. It was prime Kyle Hendricks. You deserve to be here right underneath 70. I mean, it's that simple. Kyle Wright, really nice looking breaking ball, also increased its velocity on it. Just looked better than it's ever had before. Command is still kind of in question here, and that's why he's at 70. He's not pushed up with the other, as use an old term, Spice Girls, because they want to be aces. But there's normally like five of them that we get excited about. And then by the end of the year, you remember just one of their names. Kyle Wright could be the right finally. And he's nice, fun one to take a chance on. And Also, we just mentioned Luis Patino, but sadly, he got removed from his game with an injury today. So Patino will be off next week, sadly.
Can you imagine at the beginning of the year if we were talking about guys like Kyle Wright, Spencer Strider, Tucker Davidson, all these guys from that are kind of rising into Braves options now, kind of as the season's gone along here? These names that we kind of left for dead are all kind of making a case to potentially try to get a rotation.
That's the fun, though. Is Sildar's heir? Oh, man, get in here, Strider. I mean, I don't think he's actually going to do it for a while. It seems like Atlanta recognizes that he's more of a fireman given his, I don't know, sporadic or erratic. Oh, feral command, to use a very old phrase.
Yeah.
That one's for you, Josh. And I don't know if Spencer Strider is actually going to make that transition into the rotation, but Kyle Wright should stick around. And currently it's a sixth man anyway. So I really don't think that Strider pushes into that as, at best, the seventh. I mean, Kyle Muller, honestly, could make a case as the proper seventh right now in AAA, with Strider just being in relief.
What are your thoughts on Tommy Romero, who's coming up to start for Tuesday?
So what is 144 strikeouts in 110 innings last year? I mean, it's something crazy like that.
Yeah, I actually made a tweet about him earlier today because I saw some of his highlights when I was looking at him getting called up. Mm-hmm. And I believe his stats, as I stall here, he pitched to a 2.61 ERA, a 0.96 whip, 145 strikeouts and 110 and a third innings over 23 games between AA and AAA last year.
That's insane. I mean, that's when you're chasing a prospect, that is what you are chasing, right? You just want those gaudy numbers. The one drawback is that it is Tampa Bay. However, with Patino now hurt, Yarbrough on the IL, Boz delayed, this might actually turn into something like a Shane McClanahan from last year, where they do lean on him in some way. It won't be long tomorrow. I think it's like, well, no, Jordan Hicks is 45 pitches because he's going to follow Dakota Hudson because the Cardinals-Pirates game was postponed today, which is actually a good situation, honestly, if you ask me, for Hicks, because he might get a win now. But for Romero, I think I have him labeled as a stash because he's a stash play right now. And if you have an open spot, if you have, you know, you don't have anyone exciting right now that you want to go for, sure, just pick up Romero and see what happens.
Yeah. And again, if you have not looked at some of just his pitches, the fastball is like on a rope.
It's nasty. I mean,
yeah, he increased his spin rate on it as well, which is what's helping it be more effective as well. So he's definitely somebody you can take a shot on. And, you know, if it doesn't work out or he gets sent down, just keep an eye on him because this is a guy that has a lot of good stuff and somebody that, like Nick said, could the Rays could count on. Maybe even if they send him down now, they could bring him back later this year too.
Right.
But we get into tier 12. We've got Steven Dormatz, Hyunjin Ryu.
Just try and sneak that in there, yeah. Huh?
Me and Steven Matz have a very much of a love-hate relationship. So I will get to him in a second, but Carlos Carrasco, Cal Quantrill, Michael Lorenzen, Casey Mize, Patrick Corbin, and Herman Marquez. So Steven Matz, Nick, I want you to talk me off the Steven Matz ledge here. He's down eight spots.
You're not going to get it from me.
Okay. Well, then let's both just talk about Steven Matz.
Well, I mean, okay, this is okay. So first and foremost, tier 12 is truly the point of, hey, I recognize the plethora of just fine options of truly like the Tobys. So that's why I'm saying, you know what, it's in your best interest to go after Hicks and Romero because that kind of ceiling is in shorter supply than the Tobys, especially in a 12-teamer. So you might as well chase that. And worst case scenario, you have the fallback, right? And if you settle on the fallback, there's a dime a dozen here of different ones. There were guys I left off the list that could have been inside of this if you really, truly want that kind of guy, right? I mean, you could have gone for Brad Keller, who just had a very good start. Michael Pineda is going for Detroit. You could say go after the aforementioned Dakota Hudson, or later on Marco Gonzalez or Dalton Jeffries or whatever. There are so many out there. So you might as well go for the others. And yeah, Steven Matz, I mean, apparently he has a blister, so you can't be that harsh on him.
Oh, now your mom.
I imagine over time he'll be good with the Cardinals defense behind him. But I've never really thought of Steven Matz as someone who can be a real sub 120 whip guy, and he's been around a 130 for a while. I could see him push a sub 4 ERA. and not going to hit the 30% strikeout rate. We would hope for like a 25, but that, I mean, it'll be fine. Look, if you're going to drop Steven Matz, fine. But just in a couple weeks or so, when he gets the Pirates again or gets the Cubs or something, I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll start Steven Matz.
I don't know. I always say friends don't let friends start Steven Matz.
Is that what you always say?
Friends don't let friends start Steven Matz. I wanted to dig in a little bit. Last year, he had a 3.82 ERA, an over 4x FIP, and he had four starts last year with five or more earned runs and only made it at least six innings in 11 of his 29 starts last year. Many people are talking about how he was pretty decent last year. Statcast page, if you look at it, you're going to get cold because there's a lot of blue. And ultimately, I just look at him and he's somebody, even if you roster, he can go six innings, give up three earned runs and give you like five strikeouts. But at the same time, he's the type of pitcher that goes three innings and gives up nine earned runs. And that's the type of player that can kill your ratios, can set you back weeks and weeks in any roto league. And in points leagues, he could blow up your whole week. He gives you like a negative 15, negative 20. I can never start him because I'm afraid of that big blow up that he's shown he had in his career consistently. And I just avoid it completely, and I don't touch him.
This is my Germán Márquez. I will never, with any sort of conviction, know what's going to happen to Germán Márquez, and I just don't do it. I mean, he just did well against the Dodgers in Coors. What?
But then you're like, I don't want to deal with that stress because right. Then I'll pick him up, I'll trust him, and he'll hurt me again.
Yeah, I think you can stream Steven Matz if that's an option, but I honestly think that people are just going to hold through this. The blister is the bigger question. It could benefit fantasy managers. If he goes to the IL and then gets dropped, because then he won't return to teams when he's healthy, right? People will have drafted him and then not want to let go of him. But once they do, then they won't feel the grab to pull him back, right? So that could be a benefit. We'll see.
Yeah. The last tier here, tier 13, we have Zach Greinke, Kyle Gibson, Adrian Hauser, Corey Kluber, Tony Gonsolin, Mitch Keller, the biggest dropper of the group here, Carlos Hernandez, Eliezer Hernandez, Nestor Cortez Jr., Yusei Kikuchi, Jameson Taillon, Taylor Hearn, Zach Plesac, Jose Suarez, and Austin Gomber. The spring training darling, Mitch Keller, he's fallen, and you're not giving him a hand, Nick. He's just continuing to fall down this board here. Are you out on him now completely?
I will say, by the way, Alex Fast will be so proud of you because you just moved past so many guys in tier 12. As I know, we're going to go a little bit long on this podcast, but you moved past Ryu, who I'm just kind of out on as well at this point, has diminished velocity. Well, the same diminished velocity from 2021 has not gotten it back, and that was part of the issue last year. Patrick Corbin down 13 spots because he got two whiffs only in that first start. And for me, I was hoping to see more from Corbin, but it was just a bad year. And good spring training, all this kind of stuff, like he's gonna be fine. And that's like, oh, you're not there yet, and I'm not gonna put myself in that way. I figured out the term, if you read the SB roundup Sunday night, of me saying he could figure it out, but there's no reason for you to put yourself in harm's way right now. I say that all the time in the roundup. That's called a frozen banana. Do I want a frozen banana now? No, but I might want one later.
That's interesting.
When it's when it's not frozen anymore. Okay, that's a Mitch Keller. No, Mitch. Oh my God, that it's a Mitch Haniger, Mitch Hedberg, Mitch Hedberg thing. So yeah, they're called the frozen banana. And who knows? Maybe I don't want a banana later, but at least there'll hopefully be something later. Anyway, Mitch Keller is throwing harder. It's still kind of getting hit, and his secondaries are not being the complement they need to be. He's also a frozen banana of maybe later on when he figures it out. I'll be there.
But you know, frozen bananas are like ice cream.
Some people are into them, and some people are into Mitch Keller.
That's fair. I think everybody that was on the Mitch Keller ship, they're looking for their lifeboats, and they're waiting. They're like, okay, you know what? I'll stick around for a little longer. But yeah, I mean, the velocity increase is what we were all excited about, but it doesn't look like much has changed outside of
that. Right. So I mean, the four seamer is getting more whiffs, which is good, but you got to have compliments to it. And I guarantee you, there will be a start. There will be this glorious outing. Here it is, a little slice of heaven from Mitch Keller. Five innings, seven strikeouts, one earned run, maybe one walk, two hits. Is this it? This is it? No. It's going to be a Dennis. It's going to pull you back in, and you shouldn't keep it around. Okay? That's from 30 Rock. It's fine.
I gotta watch that show. I actually haven't
Oh my god, it's so good. It's evergreen.
Is it 30 Rock or what's the name of the show with Amy Poehler?
Yeah, Parks and Rec.
Why couldn't I think it? Is Parks and Rec or 30 Rock better?
30 Rock.
They're different.
Parks and Rec is more like heartwarming from a character standpoint. You know, it hits more of those like wholesome vibes.
Yeah.
30 Rock is just brilliant. Like it's really brilliant. I mean, I could say a lot of lines, but I'm just not going to do it right now.
Well, you got me intrigued now.
Why are you wearing a tux? It's past 6 o'clock. What am I, a farmer? There are so many amazing lines in that show, and it's just, you watch 30 Rock, guys.
You're selling it well. I have to give that a shot.
You do.
But the last guys that you out in this tier that I'll make note of that you had falling a ton is Zach Plesac and Austin Gomber, both falling double digit spots. What was that with these two guys that you didn't like in their first year?
So Plesac did not have the improved slider and changeup that we need to see. Those are the two elite pitches that he had in 19 and 20 that disappeared in 2021. I was saying, you know what? I'll give him one outing against the Royals to kind of see what happens. Nope, they weren't there. Okay, good. See ya. Bye. Austin Gomber, I lowered velocity in the spring, and I kind of thought, oh, you know what? Going away on the road to at Texas should be okay, but then I got scared of Texas. And I moved him all the way to the bottom, but I made him 100 because I did that for fast. I know you talked about that last week. Like, you make a guy special. And I didn't want to keep it the same of Jose Suarez. I moved it to Austin Gomber a little bit more just to do that because I think there are some really nice secondary pitches there. It didn't come through today from what I saw with the line. But he's someone to at least monitor moving forward.
I was hoping it was going to be Johan Duran, but maybe that'll be next.
He's not a starter.
Maybe eventually, you never know.
But Aaron Ashby isn't on this list right now. Spencer Strider isn't on the list because they're not starting.
If the Twins wanted to make me happy, they would start Johan Duran.
Oh, I'll get them on the phone and let them know.
just for the reason I want him as number 100 on this list. That's the whole reason.
I wonder if there are any puns to be made with the guy's name is Duran.
I saw someone tweet at me Duran from the.
Well, right, that's the.
Yeah. But there's some other ones too.
Durant to the wire. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That might be, it sounds like I am putting him on free agency, right? Like I am dropping him.
We're not doing that with Johan Duran. Not with the stuff he's shown. Is there anybody else in this last tier that you wanted to make note of as far as everybody else? We either unranked and rose up here or rose up a few spots.
Right. You might be surprised to see Kyle Gibson not really rise, even though he dominated over the weekend. He gets the Marlins next. I maybe should have raised him into the next tier just for the next start. But as far as the whole season outlook goes, he gets cores after that. I don't really anticipate much. It's just, hey, Kyle Gibson's a good first week thing, and that's about it. Corey Kluber did well. Cutters were good. Velocity was down to 89. I'm not convinced. Tony Gonsolin does not have a slider for strikes yet, so that's why he's down. Nestor Cortez Jr., Jameson Taillon, and Yusei Kikuchi are not there for their next start, but actually the one over the weekend. Kikuchi gets the Athletics, while both Cortez and Taillon get the Orioles, and that could work out pretty dang well. But yeah, that's all I really wanted to say about this tier. And what do you know? We made it, Mandy. Yeah. We did it in about an hour or two. Look at you.
We're pretty good with time and a lot of really bad jokes and puns made, but you know what?
It sounds like a standard OTC then. You did great.
Thank you. The hour always flies by, and I enjoy going through the top 100, especially because it was actually with games played.
Yeah, so right? Amazing.
It's exciting. It's exciting. Baseball's back. Games have been played, and I'm excited to see what this list is going to look like after another week's games. But until then, Nick, that's going to do it for this episode of On the Corner. I'm your host, David Mendelson.
And I'm Nick Pollock. And we'll talk to you guys next week.